This podcast is brought to you by The Province.
The Province Sports Podcast.
New week and a new podcast for you. The first week that the Vancouver Canucks have had no team organized events of any kind. Last week we were cleaning up after the locker room clean out. That's gone by. Playoffs obviously going on without the Vancouver Canucks, but boys, there's still lots to talk about when it comes to the Canucks. That's not going to stop us. And we've said we'll try to keep the podcast going here throughout the off-season podcast. As always, a presentation of Eagle Ridge GM out in Coquitlam. We were in Coquitlam last week doing the live stage show at Woody's. We want to thank the fine folks out at Woody's. And we want to thank Eagle Ridge GM as well for their support all season long. If you're in the market for a new vehicle, start your search online, eagleridgegm.com. If you want to walk the showroom floor and the lot, now that the weather is starting to turn decent, maybe your thoughts are towards car purchase, 2595 Barnett Highway, a couple blocks west of Coquitlam Center. How much playoff hockey are you consuming?
I consume quite a bit of playoff hockey, but I do have something that's kind of gnawing at me that I feel that I got to get out.
Are you in a bad mood again?
No, I'm not in a bad mood.
That was the takeaway I heard from so many people last week, the Woody's live show, and they were like, what was wrong? Why? The season's
was
over. You should be relaxing. Why was Botch? Like, we, I get angry.
I was fired up. I don't think I was.
Oh, I don't know. I heard
from I got people. Angry at Chris Russell.
Yes.
Fucking right I did. I don't like him. I don't like him. I don't like him. I can't help it. Sorry, that fired me up. That really bugged me what happened at the end with the Sedins. I'm still like you're pushing my buttons already.
But you
like
can't
I'm a minute into this. I don't care. He shouldn't have done it. Like I'm not even kidding. He shouldn't have done it.
But he did.
Someone needs to get it out there. I'm not going to forget. I'm not letting it go.
All right.
I'm going to bring it up. I may do stories on it next year. Chris Russell, what the fuck?
Why wait till next
Why?
Year? A Chris Russell story a day all summer long. But
it pissed me off. I was angry. Well, I don't think I was angry about anything else.
Yeah,
was
you
I?
Were.
What?
Because I had talked to Besser and you hadn't.
Oh, well, that pissed me off.
You're
right.
You had your time. You've had your moment.
No, and I'm not done. I've got more fucking Besser stories coming. No, you're right. I was mad about that. I did. You're like stop pushing all the. I'm not mad. I was unsettled
right.
Certainly this but week by something else.
Oh,
by something else entirely.
Okay.
So I don't want to rehash all the things that
Fair
made
enough.
Me pissed off last week. But for sure, you and iMac talking to Besser and me not that did bug me and Chris Russell. It should bug everyone. I'm shocked. Look at you smiling about that prick. But no, this week I saw that Cebulski, those 650 guys, tweet out this stuff from Shannon about like this revisionist history on how the Canucks missed Pastrnak, which it was upset. Like I was unsettled to see it because I don't like seeing Gradin tossed under the bus like that. He was mentioned by name, and I don't think that that's a good way for the GM or the Canucks management to do business is to, tell media like that they, you know, Gradin got scolded, especially for that particular draft, because that is the draft where Jim drove the Vertanen bus. Like he absolutely, that was his pick. That was his guy. The scouts wanted someone else. Other people in the organization wanted other people. Ehlers and Nylander were right there. They were recommended to him and, he wanted Vertanen. And, that's the same draft. And later on, they had a pick and leading up to that pick, they got for the Kessler trade. He wanted Bleakley. And then, he was taken right before by Colorado, turned into a bus. Like it was a bad pick. The Canucks were fortunate that they got out of that one. Then he went with McCann and McCann, like Jim was at. So it's upsetting for me when I see. You know, so a media person say, well, the Canucks, Jim was mad at his scouting staff and scolded, the Euro staff and told Gradin he's got to do better. Well, Gradin loved Nylander, wanted Nylander, that six pick. And from the people I talked to, they had Pastrnak ahead of McCann at that point. Certainly some of the scouts did. But even if you don't believe that, Jim was in Boston all year. He ran the amateur side of their department. Like that was the, he was the executive in charge of that side of things. He knew exactly what the Boston Bruins thought of Pastrnak. He knew exactly what their, in fact, this should have been one of the greatest drafts of all time because he had the benefit of having the knowledge of everything that the Boston scouts thought and everything that the Canucks scouts thought. So Boston ended up drafting Pastrnak. He knew that their scouts loved him, and he was at there's a U18 World Championship tournament in April. I think it's starting soon. It's just about to start, I think. He was there. And interestingly, Bleakley and Virtanen played for Team Canada. They were both on the same line. They were both on the top line. I think that, and this is also for sure true. At that point, the scouts, one of their directives was that to find players who were closer to playing in the NHL. Now, it doesn't always, like, you have these stereotypes of what makes players closer. Like, people thought because of Bertanen's size, that he was closer to playing, right?
Yep.
And now we've seen, like, Pastrnak, like, played right away. So it doesn't work out how you think, is my point. Like, a lot of people thought Pettersson was a project. It would be years away. Now it looks like Pettersson's going to be at least, they hope, and think he's going to be in the lineup this fall. So it doesn't always work how you think, but the scouts were, that was one of the directives, find players closer to NHL ready. That changed recently. It changed leading up to the 2017 draft. And I think that was part of the reason that he wanted Virtanen so much, because there was a perception that he would be ready to play. And if you look at what happened, both Virtanen and McCann were put in the lineup really early. Like they did see them that way, like guys that would be able to play quickly in the NHL. I can't talk about it on 1040. This is my only outlet to bring this up. And I didn't think it was fair. I didn't think it was fair to Gradin. I think it's revisionist history. And I don't think, Jim was there. He saw Pastrnak at the U18s. Like, you know, the Czechs were the runners up, and Pastrnak blew up the World Juniors. He wasn't some secret. He had 24 points in 36 games as like a 17-year-old in the Swedish Elite League. He was phenomenal, incredibly fast, but he got injured. He had some injuries, and that kind of hurt his momentum. It was part of the reason that he didn't fall. A lot of people had him in the second round. He actually went up over the course of the year. But Jim knew everything that Boston thought. He saw, he was at the U18s there to scout him, saw the whole thing, saw Nylander too, was amazing in that tournament, by the way. And then wanted the two guys that are on the top line on Team Canada. So what does that suggest? I think, you know, part of me is convinced that he wanted to change kind of the look and the makeup of the team into a more, you know, what McCann and Virtanen represents, supposedly harder to play against. That was their MO. And Jim came in talking about meat and potatoes. And meat and potatoes is gone now. Now it's speed and skill. That's all we hear about. Speed and skill, speed and skill, speed and skill. But man, don't go back. And of all people to throw under the bus, not Thomas Gradin, dudes. Come on.
Right. And if they wanted him to do better, I think they did okay in last year's draft, right? Like, and that's a Gradin.
Yeah, pattern. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Gradin's certainly one of the guys. And he's actually out of all the guys, like, I ask everyone. I've asked Judd and Jim and all these guys in the organization, like, are you shocked at the year that Pettersson produced? And everyone to a man said, yeah, for sure. And then gave reasons why, except Gradin. Gradin said, no, I saw this coming. I knew this was going to happen. And in fact, Gradin thought Pettersson was ready to play in the NHL this year. He wanted them on the team this year. So I don't know, like, of all the scouts to call out in Canucks history, Gradin would not be on top of my list, man.
Don't you think, too, with the Pastrnak pick, like, they had picked Virtanen where they did, so they got their winger. I think they looked at the second pick in that first round as a center. And
that's, Bleakley was
Kessler,
a center.
Traded Kessler away. You look, I mean, the team's still thin up the middle, and so I think they were looking, and we always talk about best player available versus, you know, positional needs, but I think in the second pick in the first round, you probably have a little more flexibility to address organizational needs. So I think once they felt they had their big winger, they were looking for a centerman as well.
You can tell, like, the guy that they didn't get was a center that, you know, the first line that Virtanen was on. At the U18. So yeah, I totally agree with that. I totally 100% agree that went into the thinking, as well as the fact that I think the fact they're both Canadian also went into thinking that they were trying to change the mix of the team, be, you know, it was the Boston model back then. And that's gone now. Like, big boy hockey just got smashed. The LA Kings and the Anaheim Ducks are the quintessential big boy hockey teams, and they just got crushed by speed and skill, you know, which is kind of the buzz catchphrase that you're going to hear. We've heard it so many times from the Canucks. Like, I was even, and you always make fun of me for going back, but I was going back to last July, and I was like, what the hell was Jim saying, like, last July when they signed all those free agents? And it was speed and skill. Like, Delzato is going to bring speed and skill. Gagne, speed and skill. Our pro scouts love Burmistrov. Speed and skill. And it was bled into training camp. It bled into the trade deadline. We heard it at the season's end that they want speed and skill. That's great, but bring me the speed and skill. I want to see some speed and skill here, which is and the secondary thing that's bugged me this week, aside from that, is all the Spezza talk. Because he's the exact opposite of speed and skill. Like, he's about to turn 35. He's slower than the Sedins. I'm telling you, he is among the slowest players in hockey. Like, the Canucks are already, like, they are a slow team. And, they were a slow team with the Sedins. They have a chance now to kind of reimage themselves. Jason Spezza will not get that done. And sorry, I don't believe. File me under skeptical that Tom Gilardi and the Stars are going to present assets and picks to the Canucks and Aquilini to take 1 year of Spezza? No, I don't believe it.
But I think that's the key for me is, and I'm with you, I don't see an appetite for Spezza here in Vancouver, but of all the things when you talk about Jason Spezza is, it's just 1 year left on his contract.
Right, so why would Dallas give up anything of value for you to take it?
No, and that's a fair question to ask. But if you're the Canucks, you're not locking into, you know, if they go out into the market and spend all this money and gobs of money that they've got now, you know, like I see and I hear so much about, you know, sign these guys to 1 year contracts. Thomas Vanek was signed in September. Like, he didn't have options in September. You got him on a 1 year deal.
Right.
But most of these guys that get to the open market work hard for that chance to hit some sort of home run. Now, they don't all hit home runs, but Gagne's a perfect example. They had to give him 3 years last year, and he is a mid-range guy. So if you're looking at better than mid-range free agents, you're not getting them on 1 year deals. And that's my concern, whether it's Bozek, and, you know, you've laid out the dots that are connected to Newport and why, you know, it could very well make sense that Tyler Bozek winds up in Vancouver.
Well,
they're not getting him less than three years.
Yeah, 3 years. And he's 32, so he's not getting, I don't think he's getting a monster. He's 32, 40 points, and he's defensively limited. I don't think he's going to get a big 4 or 5 year deal. I think he's in that 3 year range. Another guy, Riley Nash, pending UFA in Boston. He's kind of anchoring their third line. But he's got the same agent as, he's got Overhart. So he's got the same agent as BX and Kessler. So I'm not sure that can work, but there's another guy who Boston found cheap. He's kind of on that Vegas MO, like find a guy that's underdeployed or underused somewhere and then get him instead of, like, they bought high on Gagne. Like, that's buying high. He was almost out of the NHL the year before. He came to Columbus. Columbus had him in a really sheltered role. And it was an ingenious, I can't even believe that a Torts team came up with it, but they had him on a fourth line. They sheltered him, gave him offensive deployment, gave him a big time role in the middle of the power play, in the middle of the ice, where he can, you know, use his creativity and playmaking to produce offense, help produce offense. And it worked. And he had a 50-point season. Buying Gagne was not like some under-the-rock guy. Buying Gagne was buying high.
Right. But it's just that, you know, based on one 50-point season, he was able to command a three-year deal.
Right.
From a bad Vancouver team that ultimately overpaid, too.
And now what? Like, I was writing about this today. Like, what happens to Gagne now? Like, they're for sure chasing a middle six center. The hope was that he could kind of, he was part of the succession plan to the Sedins, that he could play wing for a year or two. And then when Henrik leaves, he can move in and be an offensive center. But that kind of flopped. He was all over the lineup. I don't see that changing. Like, I honestly, and I talked to him at the end of the year and he was frustrated. He was like, I'm telling, he didn't, say this specifically, but it was easy to read between the lines that he had hoped early in the season to spend a long time with the Sedins. It didn't happen to the end of the year. There was some frustration there, and certainly some frustration by him that he only produced 31 points in the season. Well, 31 points, like that's, he's a, I hope he's a better player than that, but I honestly, I look up and down the Canucks lineup and I think, okay, they'll add a middle six center. They'll probably add a winger. Like, where is he going to play? Like, where is he going to end up?
Right, and again, with this money that they've got, like I do expect that they are going to spend some, but then it comes back to this question botch of, you know, they've got this massive pile of middle to bottom six forwards. Like, I don't know about you, but like I watch the playoffs through the Canucks prism. Like, I watch every team that's having success, and I sort of, like, where do the Canucks match up? They don't, against the good teams. But, you know, like, you talk about chasing the different models and whatnot. But when it comes to elite talent on the Vancouver Canucks, you got Besser.
Yeah.
You know, Pettersson is on path.
You hold Pettersson, and then that's...
Horvat's a good player, but he's not an elite player. Like, no. I'm not going to, and I don't think he put himself in that category either.
In terms of offensive difference makers, you got Besser, and you hope you have Pettersson.
Yeah.
That's it. And people are excited about Dahlin. I want to see Dahlin too, but you can't get around this. Like, he had 44 points this year. He had 44 points last year. And yeah, Mono was an impact and had an effect on a season, but that's, you know, he's playing the second division there in Sweden. It's at least a little, you can't depend on him. And most people in the organization, they see him as kind of middle six winger. He's not going to step in and they don't expect him to step in and be a first line player, and things can change. But if you're expecting him to be an offensive difference maker, I think that you're on the wrong path. At least in terms of being that elite guy you're talking about.
And I've seen here since the season ended, and I think I may have even taken part at some point, like people are just kind of throwing depth charts against the wall. Now, it's impossible to know what the Canucks are going to look like when they arrive at training camp and who they've brought in free agency. And let's hope that there is some trade activity as well, because we know that what they finished with isn't good enough. So they've got to change the complexion of this lineup. But I see people trying to put together, you know, depth charts and line combinations, given what the Canucks have in their stable right now. And again, it comes back to, like, I can't get past how many bottom six guys that they've got. And, you know, how many times did we hear Travis Green? Like, it was one of his mantras this past season. I want guys I can win with.
Right.
Do you think 1 year on the job was enough for him to make some declarations about individuals, first of all, and second of all?
You'd have to name them, and I'll tell you what he thinks of them.
All right, Sutter.
Yeah, man, like that's, to me, like that's a great one to throw out there, because I think when you talk about all those lineups being thrown at the wall, he just stands out there. Like, I just keep seeing Brandon Sutter, 17 and a half minutes a game, no offense, just a black hole of offense. It's just not the way teams that win are constructed. So he can talk about, and obviously he loves them, and obviously he knows that he gives them a really tough position to be in, and maybe that changes if they get a center who can take some of the pressure off of them in terms of defensive responsibility. Like, he does for sure play hard minutes. I agree, but he's never crested 40 points in his career, and you look at the teams that win, and they all have, like, you know, or a lot of them have, like, fast, dangerous third lines that can produce offense. And I look at Brandon Sutter and I'm just thinking, fuck, that's just not going to happen there. It just stands out to me as the biggest hurdle that there is in the lineup, because how do you get, like, they were second last in offense 2 years ago. This past season, they were sixth last, and that's with Besser. So they got a bump from Besser. Now, at some point, they have to be an average offensive team. Now, how do you get there? I'm not sure you can if Sutter is in this big matchup role and he's playing 17 and a half minutes a game and the coach keeps saying, well, I don't expect anyone on that line to score. What? Sorry, that's not how the NHL works right now. It's just not. No, you'll never win like that. I'm not sure that they can win. You know, you talk about players he can win with. He looks to me as a guy that has a blind spot with being able to see this point. And that is, it's going to be very difficult for them to win without scoring a lot more. And it's going to be hard for them to score a lot more if Sutter's playing 17 and a half minutes a game. If you could cut him down to 13, 14 minutes, I would think maybe. But that's why, like, possibly that I've been thinking lately, like, can you trade Sutter for a younger, like, to a, you know, playoff team that buys into this idea that they need some kind of defensive help matchup guy in the playoffs to get a younger guy with upside, who can potentially produce offense? Like, if they had McCann right now in that spot, I think they'd be fine. I'd be like, you know what? He can skate. He can shoot. Like, there's upside there. He can get more offense, and he's a good defensive two-way center. I think they'd be okay. But whenever I see Sutter, I'm like, fuck, like, how are they going to score? And who's going to end up there? Like, is Erickson going to end up there in his $6 million?
I don't have that answer, but it wouldn't surprise me. And yet, you know, you wrote your piece about Erickson, and clearly he still thinks that there's offense to give there, and he wants to be put in an offensive position. And right. Now you've taken the Twins out of the mix. So, not that they dominated ice time, but there are two guys that were, you know, offensive producers who aren't in the mix for the Vancouver Canucks. I don't want to run through every player, and play the can you win with game.
Yeah.
But I will say this, that, you know, you've got Goldobin, you've got Leipzig, you've got Gaunce, you've got Archibald, you've got Granlund, all these guys that, and again, when it comes back to me, and I look at a lot of people when they've put together a depth chart, and you have to keep in mind that, like, they need some penalty killers. Like, you can't, you know, I think that's going to work against Leipzig, and it's going to work against Goldobin, and it, you know, if you're going to inject right. The other young guys, like, I don't expect Pettersson to be, makes his team. He's not killing penalties for the Vancouver Canucks. And so, you know, like it or not, an Archibald, a Gaunce,
I don't think Archibald.
Mott, like, somebody's making this team unless they go out into the free market and spend their money on a penalty killer. Because they've got Sutter, they've got Horvat, they've got Erickson. Those three guys will be penalty killers. After that, I think it's open to the Vancouver Canucks. Now, you're not building your team around penalty killers. I understand that.
Yeah.
But within the construct of your group, you have to have some guys that can kill some penalties.
Right.
And so we know that. I mean, you've been pounding this drum for a long time. How much Travis Green didn't like the softness. How upset he was at how soft his group was.
That's right.
And so, you know, ultimately that's why Archibald got a chance with this hockey club. Well, it's the same coach. He's got the same philosophy. Even if it's speed and skill, this coach seems to like that element of the game.
Right.
So yeah. I do expect that he's going to want a team that is, you know, tougher to play against. And when I say tougher, I mean physically tougher to play against, to the point that we saw this morning the Canucks were tweeting out the hit count. And there were a couple things that jumped out at me. First of all, if people haven't seen it, the organization tweeted out where they sat in hits this year in the National Hockey League. And what, they were up 200 and some from last year. They were led by Delzotto, who liked the tweet. And somebody sent me the screen cap of, you know, Delzotto had liked, and he was in early. Like, there were about 40 reactions to this tweet from the hockey club, and Delzotto's like was, like, he was there. He pounced on this thing. Like, he pounced on opponents all season long. Do you recall any of his hits, though? Like, if I put you on the spot and say.
No, I mean, I watched the clips, and I was like, even after watching the clips, I was unimpressed with Delzotto, the hits king and his big hits. I think I asked this question sometime during the podcast, and I think you mentioned one or two that he had. Do you?
I was at a loss this morning. The video kind of cracked me up because there was a Thomas Vanek hit in it, first of all, which, like, come on. Like, if you're selling a greatest hits of your hits, Tommy V isn't the guy. And even at that, it was kind of on a back check. He cut a guy off and he hit him. But the one hit that stands out above all others came in the first 2 weeks of the season in Detroit, Vertanen on Cronwall. Like, that should have just been on a continual loop. Like,
yeah, they should have had.
That was.
I think there's a bad angle shot of that one. Like, I would have had that one. I would have started with that one in one angle. In the middle of the hit parade, I would have had it again. And then the finish would be like some big overhead angle where you can fully see the
himself up.
Yeah, right. Like, all broken. I mean, it was, and that still was Vertanen's best game of the season. He played incredible that game. Incredible. And he was better late in the season, more consistent anyway, but he never quite reached that, whatever, 6-7 shots, yeah, goal, huge hit on Cronwall, never quite matched that again. And that's the kind of player that you hope to get from him. But no, like, you know, all of the Del Zotto hits ring hollow, of course. Like, come on. He never had the puck. It was frustrating. He was the worst in the league in terms of scoring chance ratio. Like the team, they just got pinned every time he was on the ice. And like, I was wondering recently, you know, what was the pitch when they signed him? And Jim said he was going to help on the power play and he was going to add speed to the defense. And dude, like he really didn't add that much speed. Like he is a good skater, but so was Barkowski. And Barkowski made the defense worse, and Del Zotto made the defense worse this year. Like, I actually was thinking, I think I'd rather have Spezza than this guy. Because in and around the net, I'm telling you, I don't think that there was anyone who had a worse season just in the area, like a 20-foot radius around with all his, you know, sticking the stick in, not taking the – like, why wasn't he taking – if he's so tough and he gets all these hits, why the hell isn't he taking the body – you know, in front of the net, pushing guys off. Like, you know, this is the tough guy that's held up as like the hits king. Hits king! Get in front of the net and push, like, stop with the stick reaching in. Use that strength. Like, he's the workout guy and he represents the team and no one works harder and he lifts this and benches that. Well, fuck, use it in the crease, man. Why don't we ever see that? We never saw it.
No, I think that's a great point. And you know, at this stage of his career, you're not probably going to be able to overhaul him as a player. Like, he is what he is at this stage. And so it is funny that this guy that is, you know, rambunctious along the boards
right.
just gives
in front
up
of the net. He's not. Where's that guy?
Like, just every other night in the provies, you had like the screen grabs of, you know, the full extension of the arm.
Yeah.
And still not anywhere close to the guy that he was supposed to be, like, laying out with the full reach and still 3 or 4 feet away from the guy with the puck. Like, it just made
maddening.
No sense. So, you know, we're in for another season of that, though.
Right. And I would assume we are, yeah. Like, and that's one of the problems that I've pointed out for their defense. If he's playing 20-plus minutes a game and Gudbranson's playing 20-plus minutes a game or close to it, that's not going to be a good defense. It's just not. It's very difficult to have it's going to be really difficult for them to have a good defense with those two guys playing those kind of minutes. And with Sutter not producing offense and getting scorched in terms of possession. So something's got to give in the equation, right? Because you want to say speed and skill, right? Well, there's no speed and skill in Gudbranson's game. And in fact, from watching a lot of the playoffs here, like, are there any Gudbranson types that have, like, he's supposed to be the big playoff guy. Are there any Gudbranson types out there that are standing out and having good playoffs?
Well, the two guys that jump to mind for me play on the same team on Vegas, which, again, this makes no sense to me, that Vegas has the success that they're having with Braden McNabb and Derek England. Like,
England.
At the outset of the playoffs, if you had told me one of those guys would be a regular, all right, you can probably work around that. But they're playing 20-plus minutes,
right.
And that's not games that go into the overtime. Like, I'm just talking regular shifts. Like, and McNabb obviously scores the only goal of the game the other night. He's not there to score goals, but he's jumping up into the rush, and he's, you know, he looked like a finisher on that one play.
Right.
And that's why I thought, come playoff time, when it's all about matchups, I kind of thought that those two guys might get exploited. Like, I look at that Vegas defense, and I just don't see a defense that can get you through 3 or 4 rounds of the playoffs, and yet they sweep LA, and here they are, feet up now, enjoying the
Colin Miller's really good. He's really, really good. And the one thing that Vegas has is they got 4 lines that can skate. Like, all of their 4 lines are fast, and they pressure, and that takes a lot of heat off of their defense. But you're right. Like, an Eglin, though, he's played better than Gudbrand. Like, he's really learned to move the puck. He's a far better, I think, player than he's been before. I'm not sure that what I see in his game, I expect to see in Gudbranson's. But Pulock for the Leafs, to me, is the best Gudbranson example. And he just gets trashed. So I don't know. Like, I, you know, that is probably the way you paint Vegas, that's probably the best spot, I think, for Gudbrandsson to shine. If he's on a third pairing on a team that can skate, I think he'd have a chance at being just fine. Like, if you put him on that third pairing with one of those guys, I think they'd be okay. Cause they have other places that they make up for it. Unfortunately, the Canucks don't have enough speed up and down their lineup, right? Like, Bo Horvat looks at often, like before Virtanen, other than Virtanen, often looks like among their fastest skaters. And he's way improved and it's so impressive in what he's been able to do since arriving in the NHL in terms of his speed. But he's not one of the fastest guys in the league. No. Like, it's like, if that's one of your fastest players and if he stands out like that, like, You're not fast enough. And there are teams in the NHL that believe the Canucks are the slowest team and were the slowest team in the NHL this past season. And with the Sedins, they probably were. They probably were.
Right. So the Sedins are gone. So you would like to think that whoever replaces them is an upgrade in the speed department at the very least.
Right. Which brings me back to 35 old man Spezza, which is like, okay, first, I don't believe that Dallas is going to surrender these picks and assets for you to take him on. And even if you take him on, then what? Now you got to play him? Like, he's so fucking slow, man. Like, that's the last thing Green wants. Someone's right, telling me that Green likes Spezza. I'm like, what? Green likes Spezza?
Did I see somebody on social suggest Spezza between Erickson and Granlund?
Yeah. It just looked awful. I was just like, I wince just looking at that. You know, that does not read to me like a team that's, you know, all about speed and skill and trying to get younger. And then they roll out a line like that. Maybe if they get Spezza and trade Sutter and then like, add another offensive center that can skate, maybe I'll get on board. But I'm still not thinking you're going to get much in return. These so-called assets you're going to get back in that kind of deal.
Podcast, as always, a presentation of Eagle Ridge GM. April, as March was, is truck month out at Eagle Ridge GM, so they're continuing that promotion, get up to $11,000. Total value on the largest selection of Silverados and Sierras in stock. Go to eagleridgegm.com for full details. You wrote about it. Kuz wrote about it as well. In fact, this is kind of where it all started. The Spezza talk this week.
I didn't write about Spezza. I wanted to.
No, but it bled out of Kuz's. He had the chat with Jim where the Spezza thing came up.
Right.
And Berchi and Grant.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Fine. And
unbelievable.
So, yeah, because like at this time last year, and Sven Berchi was, he turned 25 on opening night. So last summer, he was 24. He was below the 25 bar.
Yeah.
And he was always lumped in
yeah,
with
he was.
The young guys.
Yeah.
Like he was one of the first names generally that came out.
100%.
When the young guys were listed.
You're absolutely, he was held up all summer long and into training camp as a guy that they had developed and a huge success story and one of the young guys that the team was building around. Absolutely, 100%.
Fast forward, not even one full calendar year, and he's got a foot out the door. This is it. Like, shape up or ship out. You're getting a one-year deal whether you like it or not. Like, I don't know. I was taken aback by the comments. Like, things changed, and as you pointed out in your piece, like, his season wasn't that bad.
His season was fine. That is, his season is exactly what Sven Berchi is. You cannot reasonably expect anything more than that from him. In fact, he was on a line at one point of the season that was inspiring all these debates about what are we going to nickname the line? Is it going to be
Killer Bee, Pebble Bee?
And Bulis had like, let's name it after a bus line. Like, that was the worst. Can I just say, like, naming a line after a bus route is the worst fucking nickname you could have. Like, there's nothing worse than being on the 99 bus or any fucking bus. Like, it's just awful.
Rush hour. You're crowded, fucking on a bus. Wet. Stinks.
The 99 B-line, like, or whatever. I can't remember what he called it, but he named it after that bus line. I'm
it's
like,
also like the slowest mode of transportation, unreliable. Like, I hear people are always complaining in Vancouver about the bus system. Like, if you want to name it after fighter jets or something,
yeah, right.
Like aggressive.
Something amazing about a bus. Jesus. But anyways, there was big debates and there was like, what's going to hold up? And the people were mad. Like, the people were asking me, which way are you going to go? And I'm not going in. I don't like any of these, like Killer Bees. Like, I don't like, I think
I
you.
Hate names.
Yeah,
I
that's what
hate
you hate all nicknames. But I am 100% on board with you on the line names.
Like, because if you're 11 years old and you're sitting around with your buddies after school, go for it.
Yeah.
If you're a grown man and you're getting paid to cover the hockey team, you leave line names out of the conversation.
Right. Unless it's one of the best lines in hockey and it sticks together for a couple of years. Like, you don't even like West Coast Express?
I didn't need a what? Name.
Oh my God. Okay. You've lost all say on this topic then. That's
what are you
not
talking about? I don't
No, you're
need...
too you're too divisive. You're like
I go to the games, I watch the players. I don't need pet names for the player. I
oh, come on. It's sports. It's
no.
fun. Oh, look. That's enough. You'll have to get someone else to on your podcast to talk about that topic, because that's a terrible attitude.
You sound like you're siding with Bulis now.
No, I don't like I said there. I if it's the best line in hockey or one of the best lines, and it exists for a season or two or more, then it's fair game. You can come up with a name. But if it's just some
for like
random
Marchessault and Carlson, and you have a name for them.
Randomly, if the line has 3 good weeks together, then you come up with a nickname, and then all of a sudden the offseason, the GM saying, you know, this guy's on his way out of town. But, like, Granlund had a terrible season. There is no way you can compare Granlund, lump Granlund, and Berchi together. And as I was saying earlier, like, you can't expect – Berchi had 15 goals in 53 games, which puts him on a 22-goal pace for an 82-game schedule. Right around 50 points. He had 29 points. Puts him on a 50-point pace. That's Sven Berchi. That, you'll get that. If he ever is able to stay healthy, you'll get that for 82 games in any of the next 3 or 4 years. So to come out and say, like, he's falling by the wayside, no, this is the player you develop. This is the guy you have. He's a 20-goal guy, but he gets hurt a lot. He can't stay in the lineup. That's the big drawback about Berchi, and that's one of the reasons that I think they should look long and hard about moving him. That and the fact, I think Goldobin can replace him. And they have a glut of guys who could step up and play on the wing and they'll be fine. Move Berchi for picks, whatever you can get. Give Goldobin an opportunity. And if he doesn't work out, throw Leipzig or whoever else you want to throw in there. There's lots of other guys that could be in line for that spot, including someone that they sign in free agency. What I'm worried is that he's a year away from unrestricted. He's a restricted free agent now. He's a year away from UFA. So you give him this so-called prove it deal, the one that they gave Gudbranson, which is mentioned in Kuz's piece. Like, let's do the same thing with Gudbranson. What? That worked out terribly. You backed yourself into a corner. He had no trade value. You ended up signing him on a 3-year, $12 million deal, which is overpaying the guy who was the third pairing guy all year right up till then. The Gudbranson plan sucks. Like, who would want the Gudbranson plan? We're really going to do the Gudbranson plan again, especially for a guy in Berchi who's been hurt a ton. He's yet to play 70 games in an NHL season. You give him his 1-year deal. What happens if he gets hurt again? He's only played 40 games, let's say, he gets hurt. He's played 40 games. He's got 10 goals. And then fucking what? You're just going to let him walk to unrestricted free agency? Does he have any value at the deadline? No one's offering a draft pick. All of a sudden, you got another Tyler Motte. Like, I just don't – I think the plan sucks. I think if the plan is to sign him for 1 year, that plan sucks. I think you sign him for 2 or 3 years. You try to get a bargain, or you trade him, or you do something else. But the one-year plan, leading him on an expiring deal into next year as a UFA, fucking sucks. I don't like it.
Right, and – you know, you're comparing him to other players. I think, too, you have to look at Chris Tanev, because, you know, this organization missed the boat. Like, even if they trade Tanev this summer,
right,
they're not getting what they would have got at this time a year ago.
That's right.
And for whatever reason, and it really is, and this to me cuts to the core of this management group, this team has been so bad for so long now, and they're so loyal to these same guys that don't deliver anything for the organization. And I'm not talking individually, but I'm collectively. Like, why are you tied to the same group,
right,
that keeps delivering
the worst
29th
team in hockey
and 30th place finishes? Like, it's not working. I can see it and you can see it. So to keep coming back with the same group and thinking these are the core guys, these are important, like, cut, make some cuts. That's why I keep saying, like, there has to be some activity on the trade front. I don't know how active they're going to be in free agency, but they've got this money. I expect that they will do some things this summer. I want to see them active on the trade front. Like, my arm is sore from beating the trade tentative drum.
Right. And now there's another complication in the trade tentative movement in that we all know, like, they need a center. Like, the team, I've mentioned this, I was with Blake the other day and I was saying, like, it's actually underreported how bad the current NHL roster is right now. Like, if they were playing right now, if the new season started now, it would be like, you'd be hard pressed not to pick them for last overall because they're missing the Sedins. You're missing a huge offensive minded center. We talked earlier about Sutter being a black hole. Horvat's fine. You know, I have no complaints about Horvat, but he needs help. He needs some secondary scoring. And right now it doesn't exist. So I think we all know that they are going to be pursuing a center, whether it's free agent, we mentioned some names earlier, or through a trade. Now, this is what brings me back to Tanev, is that I'm worried. Some people think around the team that they're going to try to force a Tanev for a center trade. So now, not only are you limited to teams that want Tanev and value Tanev, you got to find teams that have that and have a center that you're interested in trying to acquire. So rather than selling him off to the whatever the highest bidder is, auctioning him off, and whatever the biggest bounty you can collect, you've now kind of focused yourself on saying, okay, we need a center back for Tanev. And I hope that that's not the case. I mean, if a nice center comes back in return, I'm not going to complain about it. I would rather them get a package together that includes a first-round pick. So hopefully they'll get the Pastrnak this time, or the Besser this time, have another shot late in the first round at it with the Leafs. For example, it's hard to get around that one, like get the Leafs first and something else. I think that that would be a great deal for Tanev. But I am concerned that they'll force feed a Tanev trade to try to get a center back, and then I don't think you'd be maximizing value in him.
And it really is crazy when you kind of track it all back and you think, like, here they are chasing a young center when they had Jared McCann. Like, the Gudbranson deal just hasn't worked on so many levels,
right,
including the fact that Gudbranson hasn't developed, like, to the point where if he was this big right side defenseman that, you know, could have made Chris Tanev expendable, and then you had Tanev as this prize trade chip to move to address some other needs, but Gudbranson's not that. They still think they want and need Tanev, at least according to, you know, Jim's comments at the end of the season there, where his name was being floated as a potential captain. I mean, maybe it's just talk.
There's no way he's going to be. I can promise you.
I'm with you there, but again, I promise you. Funny that name,
Edler and Tanev and Delzato, are not going to be the captain.
I'm with you there, but it struck me as funny that his name was on the list of potential. Like, again, I want guys that are on the way out, and I've said this before to you here on the podcast. Like, I know that fans get the concept and talk is cheap, but until I see this management group get creative and actually apply creativity to some of these moves, I don't know that they can actually, like, pull the trigger on. They've done hockey trades, I get that, but I want to see them, like, work the cap, work the system, make some moves that I would consider outside the box a little bit. And I'm still waiting. And another week has gone by, and I'm sure another week will go by. It's not trade season right here, right now. But, you know, every year leading into the draft, we talk about, oh, this is the year that they're going to make some things happen. And you know,
Jim loves draft picks.
Yeah.
That's always Jim loves draft picks. I've heard that since 2014. And they're never out there trading for these draft picks. And they got gifted that second round pick because of Torts, yep, and they got Gajewicz. Which could turn into a nice player. He's in fact, they did draft him for need. Like, they saw a guy that, okay, we need this type of player on the team. And maybe he can be that player, right? So that's one of the really frustrating parts, that when you're like kind of looking at, the way that management has done business, they haven't had a lot of success in free agency, for example. Like, if you go back to that 24-hour period where they signed the six guys, right? It was Rodin started it off, then it was Bermistrov, Delzato, Gagne, Wierkosz, and Nilsson. Those were the six.
Yep.
They all fucking flopped. All of them. All of them were bad. Like, all, you know, to varying degrees. Wierkosz never got his chance.
Rodin, they chased out of town. Burmistrov, they chased out of town. Delzato made the defense worse. And Gagne, that was the fear that some had at the time. Like, if you put him, if he's not playing sheltered minutes, he's going to get exposed and he's going to have the same problems he did elsewhere. And that's exactly what ended up happening.
Right. And that followed on the previous July 1st, that was Louis Erickson Day. And the other signings were Chaput and Megna. Like, they have stepped to the plate here an awful lot on free agency day in the last 2 years and swung and missed.
Right. So it has not been an area of strength for this management group, okay? You can debate trades and we can go into that. What has been, though, if you're going to say, like, okay, if we're going to really do some self-evaluation, I try to understand, it's been 3 years where the team has the fewest points in the NHL. Like, I think it's a great point for, you know, Jim got his extension and Trevor's got the job for multiple years still. Why not sit back and say, like, look, what have we done well and where have we not? They've definitely not done well in free agency. They have definitely first round picks have been mixed. We'll see what happens with Pettersson. And I hope, you know, we expect the world from him. But so far, it's been mixed on the first round picks. Where they have nailed a lot, where they have had the most success to me, is in the middle rounds. Finding a guy like Gaudette in the fifth, like Trampkin, terrific pick. They got this guy, Yashik, in Utica right now, who they got in the sixth round.
Yep.
Disappeared. He got buried by his Czech team. Then he got onto a new team. All of a sudden, he started showing signs of life. He's a legit prospect right now. He may work, and that's all you can hope for if you're getting these guys in the fifth, sixth round. He's like a legit guy that can play NHL games. Gaudette already has. Forsling has. Trampkin did.
Demko has. Yeah.
Demko was a second round pick. Yep. Brisebois, they love. He was a third rounder. So they've done really well finding guys, potential prospects. They don't all work out. They don't all explode into Cole Lind. They think the world of Cole Lind, second round pick. So why not? Like, that is the one thing that I'm just flabbergasted by. Like, their reluctance to go out there and chase draft picks. And even when Gudbranson trade was at its peak, like, they got to trade him or they should trade him. Remember IMAC writing a story and saying, like, if they were going to trade Gudbranson, they would only trade him for another defenseman. What the fuck? Why? Get these picks, man. Help this scouting staff that has done a really good job finding nuggets in the middle rounds. I don't get it. How does it make any sense? Like, why won't they play to these strengths?
I don't have the answers for you. I wish I did.
No, I know. It's just a rhetorical question. It's just frustrating because we all want them to have a really good team and we want to be in the mix here in the playoffs. I want to be covering the playoffs. You do too. The fans want to be watching the playoffs.
Do you really want to be in Vegas?
I would. Well, yeah, you're right, man. I would fucking pass on that.
But it comes back. Okay. So all of this, I mean, we do this on a weekly basis. Ultimately, and you've asked the question to Jim and Trevor. I was there in the room. You know, when can fans expect this team to be competitive again?
Right.
And I know it's a frustration of yours that no one's willing to put a timeline on it.
But why? Like, okay.
But no, so let's, as we sit here, and we've just spent, 40 minutes talking about the fact they want one elite player on their NHL roster right now.
Right.
Like, I still think they're 3 years away from closing the gap. Like, they can continue to improve incrementally, and they were 4 points better this year than they were a year before. I don't know that that's a marked improvement, but it's a small step in the right direction, I guess. Travis Green's first year on the job. But when we talk about all the weaknesses, the glaring weaknesses on this roster, like, I still see them I look at, like, the middling teams, the Colorados, Colorado's putting up a good fight against Nashville right now, but Colorado's not a great team. They've got a great player in Nathan MacKinnon, but they're not a great player, but they made the playoffs. They finished way ahead of the Vancouver Canucks.
Right, and they got a lot of better pieces around them. Like, right. They got a defenseman with 50-plus points. And,
you know, you have to ask, okay, if the Canucks are getting into the playoffs, who's coming out? I think Southern California is pretty evident that there's some work to be done with both the Ducks and the Kings.
It's not a great division. Like, the division's
that
do well.
Plays into the Canucks' favor. Absolutely, yeah. It does. But I don't know, for me, and people probably don't want to hear, I still think 3 full years of struggle here before.
Yeah, and I don't think that there's anything wrong. Like, people say, oh, you can't ask that question. That's an impossible one to ask Trevor and Jim. Like, really? Like, they can't say in 3 years we expect to be in it, in the mix, like in the legit mix to be a contender in 3 years or in the playoffs. are realistic in 3 years. Like, that's 7 years of these guys. That's 7 years that they've been in charge of the organization. I think that like, if you say 3 to 5 years, we're going to be a contender in 3 to 5 years. In Ottawa, Melnick or one of them said 3 to 5 years. Like, I think that that's like 5 years. That's like a decade of Lyndon and Penny. Like, if they don't have a contending team in 5 years, they should quit. They've got to leave. Like, come on, a decade and they can't produce. Like, I don't think that there's anything wrong. And I think the fans would rally around it if they said, like, look, we have to be patient, but in 3 to 5 years, we're going to have a contender. Is that not so hard to say? Is that so bananas?
I think because Jim's been burned by the fact that, you know, his first comments when he took the job were he could turn it around quickly.
Yeah. And
obviously, that hasn't been the case.
But that's 10 years of Jim, 10 years of Jim. He better have a team. If it were 5 years from now.
And I think the issue is sort of heightened by the fact the team that he came from, the team he left behind, won the Cup in 2011, got back to the final in 2013, and here in 2018 has a legitimate shot of winning the Stanley Cup again.
Yeah, and they've done a great job drafting. They've done a great job, like a really, really good job. And they were criticized. And there was other guys that they could have had when they had the three picks in a row. Obviously, what was that? Barzal that they missed right after it. But DeBrusque's been great. He's helped that second line. And obviously, we talked about Pasternak earlier and what that has meant to them. And Pasternak was right there for Jim. He could have stolen him right away from the Boston Bruins.
And I always think he kind of gets lost in everything else with the roster that they've got, but they felt that they had the assets necessary to make the Rick Nash trade as well. You know, and good teams are able to stockpile assets, so when the opportunity presents itself, they can pounce. Like, I think of the LA Kings in their glory years. You know, they traded away Braden Shen, they traded away Wayne Simmonds to get guys like Carter and Richards that helped them win the Stanley Cup, but they had drafted so well that they had those types of players that they felt they could peddle to get guys in that could help them win the Cup.
Well, and in the expansion draft, they protected Kevin Miller, who's kind of their Tanev, shutdown defensive guy, instead of Colin Miller, who in his rookie season had like 16 points in half a season. Like, can you imagine if a defenseman showed up here and he had 16 points in half a season? Like, we would be on the back page of the Province. I'd be writing multiple features about him. We'd be talking about him like every other day on the radio. Like, holy fuck, look at this guy.
He's going to coverage Hutton got as a 25-point guy. And he was good in his rookie season. But we're talking about a guy that was projected at more points than that if he had played the full year for the
Right. Rams. And Colin Miller has developed into a 40-plus point guy in Vegas. And Hutton has gone away, has totally disappeared. And I could talk about Hutton every day. Like, anytime you bring up Ben Hutton, I feel like I could talk about it forever because he did show a lot of promise there. His skating was good. It was good. That's a major letdown in terms of development for the organization. Like, speed and skill, important. Draft and develop, important. Like, these are two of their big slogans and catchphrases that the Canucks use all the time. They had a player in Ben Hutton. They don't have a player anymore.
I get a kick out of the fact, and I've seen this an awful lot, that, people look at Vegas and the success that the Knights are having and saying, an example of a team that is giving guys that chance that they just didn't get elsewhere.
Right. Yeah. You don't like that?
Well, no.
That is true.
There is. There's a huge element of truth to that.
Why would that bug you?
Well, because let me finish.
Okay.
Because they have to be the right guys to get the opportunities. The Canucks gave Jason Megna and Michael Chaput all the opportunity in the world a year ago. They're not in the second round of the playoffs now.
That's true.
So it's not enough just to say, give your guys on the farm an opportunity. They've got to be the right guys.
Certainly.
The Vegas story is remarkable on so many levels. And yeah, I mean, Eric Halla wasn't much in Minnesota.
No.
I think I looked at it when the Canucks were in Vegas earlier this year. Eric Halla had scored 2 power play goals in his life in 4 seasons in Minnesota.
Yeah.
He led the Vegas Knights in power play goals this year. Now, clearly there was more for him to give, and he wasn't getting that opportunity in Minnesota. But to sit here and say that people saw, this guy becoming the Vegas Golden Knights power play secret weapon, they're lying. They're flat out lying. But he was a guy that has benefited. I mean, they all those top guys, Carlson. I mean, it's ridiculous what he's done in 1 year with Vegas.
Right.
But are you telling me that if Michael Chaput and Jason Megna were on the top line of the Vegas Knights, that they would be in the same situation they are right now?
No, of course not. But and the Canucks have tried these guys. Like, they gambled. Like, I remember Burmistrov being pitched as a low-risk, high-reward guy. Rodin being pitched as a low-risk, high-reward guy. Now, neither of them really got those opportunities that you're talking about. Certainly, Rodin got just chased right out of Van and never, like, remember, like, Green saying, I don't need a look-see, or I don't need a look at a player. And then the rest of the season, he kept saying, I want to have a look at this guy. I want to see what he can do. Their treatment of Rodin was abysmal. Like, that was just, there's all kinds of stories that aren't even known. Like, but it, that wasn't fair to Rodin. Burmistrov, they flopped on. They missed on those guys, Megna, Chaput. They missed, you know, thinking Delzato could be this type of guy. But Delzato played. It's not like Delzato didn't get over. He was playing 24 minutes a game in Philly a couple of years ago before he started becoming a healthy scratch. But I would say on their current roster, like, I do think, you know, Leipzig, given the right opportunity, what kind of player could he be? I always come back to Goldobin. I think Goldobin is the great example. Goldobin is the guy, 12 goals in 61 games. When Berchi arrived here, he had 8 goals in 66 games. I think that Goldobin was better than you remember this past season. I think that, yeah, his defensive play and his effort in his own end and all of that needs work, but he's the type of guy to me that in the right situation, in the right deployment, he can have a really good offensive kind of breakout. And Berchi's not unlike those Vegas guys. Like, Berchi was given up on by the Flames, came to Vancouver. Vancouver gave him opportunity, and he was shining. Shining right up until this week when Jim said he's on his way out if he doesn't shape up. So, and Granlund for a heartbeat looked like he could be that guy. He was really good with the, or at least not really good, but he was,
he
was effective with the Sedins. You had him tabbed for some immense number of goals. How many was it?
Forget it. I don't know.
What was
I've
it?
Had like 8 months of sleepless nights.
What?
I don't sleep well.
Was it 24?
I don't eat anymore.
Like, did they have?
I have to live with that.
Besser only scored 29.
You thought to start. Now I'm getting angry. Leave me alone. Just let it go.
24 goals, though.
Well, if you played the whole season.
Oh, my God.
We'll never know.
Right. That's a good
I'm holding to that. We'll never know.
Right.
Oh, and by the way, for the next, like, decade, I'm just picking Besser as the leading goal scorer. Like, I'll put that out there now. Like, I'm going to take the mistake.
Well, how many? Okay.
No, I'll come up with
I'm
a number.
I'm so excited.
I'll come up with a number. But
yeah.
I'm just like, and that way I won't look foolish. Like, Pettersson may best him at
some
point.
So you had Granlund leading the team in goals this year?
Sad. I've had to seek out professional help on this one.
Oh, my God. That is fun. But where I am so excited for your August column.
I'll always have the Besser interview.
Where your August column, where you come up with the goal predictions, and I can't wait to see where you have Pettersson pegged.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited to see where you have Leipzig pegged, Goldobin. Like, there's a lot of guys I'm super – that is the most anticipated column of the entire summer.
But the battle there is, will those guys be on the roster? Like, that's the –
we'll have a better idea in August. I am going to – I honestly want to arrange my vacation schedule around that column. So I'm here and in Vancouver and working when the column is released because I want to comment on it. I want to podcast on it and I want to get it all out there, especially I'm riding high. Everyone should be remembered that when everyone was down on the Canucks and thought the worst, everyone said 15 games, they may not even win one. I stood up and said they're going to win 6. And guess what? They won exactly 6 in the final 15 games. I feel that I don't get enough credit for this prediction. It was pretty incredible. You do have to admit.
Yeah. I mean, there's still a little gray area about whether it was 6.5, but you're right. Like, there were lots of people like, are they going to win another game?
Right.
They're not going to win. No. And, you know, like, at that time, they weren't scoring goals. Let's forget winning games. They couldn't score a goal. And you're right. You stepped up and stepped out there and did say that they would win 6.
And
what it got them. Ultimately, we'll find out next. We'll find out next week.
Next Saturday.
What it got them. Just as we wrap things up here, I know Ed Willis has been dispatched to Utica.
Right.
Comets up against the mighty Toronto Marlies in the opening round of the AHL playoffs. But I do think, and for good reason, there should be some real interest in this Utica team, and we touched on a number of the guys that are down there. And obviously, it's all on Thatcher Demko. Like, I mean, he's going to have to be the difference maker, as he has been for that team for much of the year, because that's a stacked Marlies team.
Well, they're less stacked with as long as the Leafs are in the playoffs.
Right, but that point's been made, too, that if the Leafs get punted, then
they have three stars coming out.
So look out.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, even from this distance, I think it's there's no playoff hockey here, so I'm kind of intrigued to see how
Did you pitch to go? Like I was telling you, you should have pitched to go. You could have been covering.
That conversation didn't go very far.
Oh, did you? Did
it's
you
all on
mention
Ed is our
Ed is our leader.
Ed's our man now.
Yeah, no, I think that they actually have and they have a chance with the guys that are parachuting in here to have an exciting team. Like if you can have Dahlin on that top line. And you hope that, you know, he can be an offensive spark plug, and lots of people have made the case that he's so good in and around the net. And certainly that goal that we saw him score, with the, you know, great edge work in and around the net was a prime example of the type of player and type of plays you can expect, from Dahlin. If they got Goldobin cooking on the second line, they got Cole Lynn going on the third line. They have three lines for the first time in a while I can remember that have the potential to be offensively dangerous, and they got a chance to win.
I joke about Chapu.
Yeah, he's a fine center in the
level,
yeah,
absolutely.
No, he's good.
He's had a good season down there.
He's a borderline NHL player for sure.
Yeah, he's just when he's made the jump to the NHL, he hasn't thrived with the opportunity.
Well, Willie had him playing with the Sedins, and like that was was a nightmare.
Not for him, it wasn't. Like when we talk about guys getting opportunities, look, you can't ask. Last year, he got called up. He got to play with the Sedins.
Yeah,
you're a farmhand.
Great for him.
Like,
you're right.
Yeah. So
awful for
but
us.
But at the AHL level, like he's had a nice season. He plays a key role down there, and so I'm kind of curious to see. We talk about Jastic, you know, Chatfield, and Breezeball, and why Wirkot didn't get a look. Who knows? But he's had a decent season.
And
down
Zach
there too.
McEwen, who I had Comets Corey, I arranged to get him for his first hit on 1040.
Right.
Did you hear it?
I did.
He was really good, eh?
Yeah.
They should have him on more. I was trying to pitch. Like, he's a great regular. To me, he would be a great regular to have on to talk about the Comets because he not only knows the Comets inside out, he obviously knows the Canucks inside out, and it's well documented how many times he's forecasted who the fuck was going to be on the team. So, and he's big on Dahan going to the Canucks. So it's got me thinking, like, man, this is going to happen or could happen. But Dahan has the same agent as Ben Hutton, so I'm like, maybe not. But
are they running track together in the offseason, running up mountains?
But no, he was really good. He brought up McEwen, and Comets Corey thinks he's a legit. He thinks he's got a legit shot. Like McEwen was getting pitched last summer by Jim as him and Griffin Molino as the two, you know, future NHL. We've uncovered two future NHL players.
But when they signed McEwen, like there were lots of people in the cheap seats throwing darts at the Canucks.
Oh yeah,
wasted contract.
Yeah.
And
he's looking pretty good now. And Corey has him as a potential guy in the NHL. And so I'm gonna stick with Corey on this one. So I think that there's a lot of really Ed's got some good storylines there. Of course, I'm expecting a two-page spread on Breezeball, though, right? Like, there's got to be some big.
That would be your starting.
That's got to be.
That's your starting point.
And you'd lead with what Weisbrod said at the in Penticton at Young Stars, where he just gushed about him. You follow that up with every time this season where Jim or Trevor have mentioned him, and I mean, there's like 700 words right there. I mean, they have just gushed about him all year. So I'm expecting big things from Breezeball. I'm expecting big things from the Comets, and I'm like, they have a shot to win the series. The Marlies are a better team, but three of their best players are with the Leafs right now.
Well, we'll see where the mighty Comets are when we get together next week, and it'll be our, I don't know if you can't really preview the draft lottery. I mean, the balls are going to fall the way they fall, but when we do this next week, we'll be that much closer.
No, and there's lots of
talk
we can
lottery.
Discuss, like what they, well, you know, like I got some ideas what they might do depending on where they are.
Sure.
I think one of the things that you can't underestimate this time, this year, based on what happened last season. Okay, so last season heading into the draft, there was lots of guys who thought that Cody Glass and Pettersson were really close on the Canucks draft board. And it was even reported that given the choice, the Canucks would probably go with Glass. I think, looking back now, that the Canucks sent out some misdirections over the course of the months and weeks leading up to the draft. And I think people got to be careful of you know, what kind of conclusions they draw from what they hear. Because now that, you know, having talked to many of the scouts about Pettersson and about their draft board that year, it wasn't even close. Like, they knew exactly what they wanted in Pettersson. They saw the type of player, Gradin, like I told you, Gradin pitched them as Pettersson being a guy who at his age could have historic offensive output in the Swedish Elite League. That exactly happened. They had him super high. They had Makar right above him. And I think that when you're breaking down how the Canucks might draft, you look at this year's draft and you look at Quinn Hughes, you look at Makar, there's a lot of similarities between the two. And one of the things that I started this podcast talking about is that the new directive for the scouting staff is that closeness to being NHL players is no longer a priority. Just get the best players with the best upside and the best skill. And it may be Quinn Hughes.
And then the following year, they can get his brother, Jack. And
that's right.
Then you get the
tank for Hughes.
Yeah, exactly. And then start up with brothers again in the next two decades. Just forget the Sedins. Well, not forget them, but it'll be the Hughes.
And there was a big tweet from you about cutting your grass.
Yeah, I mowed my lawn for the first time yesterday.
And
this was a big deal.
You're like breaking out commercials about the A&W guy.
Well, that guy's just pissing me off because every time I turn on my TV and I've watched a ton of playoff hockey, this guy, like, he's always all over the place giving away hamburgers. How come I've never stumbled upon him ever? Like, in the city, like, I want to stumble. If he's giving away hamburgers, like, give one to me.
But don't you see,
but why is he going to London?
Yeah, because he's showing London, like, look at these amazing burgers we have in Canada.
Yeah, but he's not working for, like, Canada Tourism. Like, he wants all these people from England to come to Canada now?
No, but he's going.
There are not
going...
enough people in Canada to support A&W to buy the... It would be like that. That's a ridiculous push because for A&W, like, their market is our country. Like, I don't care how many people are coming from London to check out A&W. No, that's ridiculous.
No, he goes to London to say, like, we have the best, like, of all the countries, Canada has the best burger. Like, look at this burger you can get for $2. And they're like, $2? Oh, my God, I can't believe
it. That's the stupidest. So what?
I'm into it. I would be more into it.
But he should be telling people in Canada, like, who cares? Like, you're not telling the people of London how great the...
Yeah, they
are the Canucks marketing to London now? We've got this hockey team over in Vancouver. Come and check them out. No, they've got a market, and they are. I see they're trying to sell season tickets during the playoffs, which I get it. Like, it's a hockey market. You're marketing to hockey viewers. But at the same time, like, I'm engrossed in this great playoff game, and then there's an ad for the Canucks that pops up, but it's generally a Besser goal, which I think is... I mean, it seems like smart, but pretty natural marketing too. If you're going to try and sell the Canucks, make it all Besser all the time.
Yeah. See, I think I do like the idea of going to another country and then saying, like, look at these amazing burgers you can have for $2 back in Canada, and them going, like, this is amazing. Like, I can't believe they have these great burgers in Canada. But it would make more sense to me if they went to the place that's known for burgers, which is the U.S., and go to places like, different spots in the U.S., like, I don't know, Texas or something like that, where they're known for their meat. Like, and say, like, try this burger in Texas. And the guy goes, whoa, man.
No, and first of all, I think...
You wouldn't buy into that?
No.
You don't like my ads?
And I still, like, I know that, like, London Bridge is in the ad, but I still think it was shot on a set here in Vancouver. Like, I don't think the guy actually went over to London. Like...
He's definitely in London. He's walking. Everyone's got accents, and they're talking about quid.
You can get actors bought.
Oh, come on. Are you a moon landing? They didn't land on the moon guy, too?
No.
But, like, wow, what a conspiracy theory.
Is he going to go to Paris?
Say a fucking W. Why wouldn't they go to London?
Is he going to go to Paris next and try to convince the Parisians that they're missing out?
Like, I would like that commercial.
Food countries, I think that, and cities. Yeah,
a good idea. I actually like that idea. I think you should pitch that to A&W. Paris, to me, makes more sense. They're known for their food. Like, England's known for having shitty food.
Right.
Bangers and mash.
Yeah, so the whole concept.
So that doesn't make sense. You know, but conceptually, I like this idea of going to, like, Texas that's known for its meat,
Paris, which is known for amazing food, and then they try the A&W burger, and we see their reaction. London doesn't.
Guys should be pushing onion rings. If you're pushing anything at A&W, it should be the onion rings and not the burger at all. And why do they name them after like people? That's another episode.
Yeah, I hate ordering there.
I don't care how good it is. Like, I would be embarrassed to go to the front.
Mama Burger. Mama Burger.
Like, I'll take a number four. I'm not. You're not going to get me to say
Teen Burger.
A Mama
Papa Burger.
That is like,
you're right.
Good marketing and bad. That's
bad.
Stupid marketing. Yeah. But yeah. So, all right, we'll leave it at that. But yes, I got my lawn mowed. I'm coaching my kid in baseball. Like, spring has arrived now.
Yeah. So you played baseball? Is it like?
I did. I played Little League up until
how
19
old?
Years, probably 14 or 15.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Did not know that.
Mm-hmm, there you go. The things you reveal on the podcast.
Right. What position did you play?
I was always a middle infielder.
You could play shortstop?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you can still field?
I don't know.
Hit them grounders and stuff, and you do all that shit.
You do what coaches do,
right?
Yes, that's generally what you do at practice. You hit them grounders.
And do you pitch BP?
You might even throw. Yeah, you might even throw the the occasional.
How old are the kids?
12 and 13.
All right.
Yeah. We won our first game last night.
Wow.
Yeah, off to a 1-0 start.
Yes.
Podcast, as always, presentation of Eagle Ridge GM out in Coquitlam. If you're in the market for a new vehicle, by all means, check them out. They've been great supporters of ours, and so we ask that you show them that same kind of support. Check them out online, eagleridgegm.com. And then if you want to see the showroom, they are at 2595 Barnett Highway, a couple blocks west of Coquitlam Center. So the next time we do this, be days ahead of the draft lottery, ping pong balls. Jim is going this year instead of Trevor.
Oh, right.
Who,
how did that come out? Who found that out? Just was it a Canucks release or?
No.
All right.
I know I was in conversation with somebody in the organization who told me that Jim was going.
So you found the information.
That Trevor. And I can't blame Trevor. Like, that look of disgust and disdain, like, is etched permanently in Canuck lore.
I know, but no one has better looks than Ben. Like, it's going to
be. So, no, it's probably in all things, it's a good thing.
Yeah.
They're trying to mix it up a little, and we'll get some sort of reaction from Jim. 28. That's going to do it for the podcast here on Problems.